Hi, welcome to Jot Notes, a podcast where we dive into the world of books and the lives of authors. My name is Jenna Green, and I'm a YA fantasy author, author of the Imagine series and the Reborn Mark series. Normally, Miranda O is here, and this would be the time when I would introduce her. She's a contemporary chick lit author, author of the Chin Up Tits Out series. She's also the producer of this show. And we have a very fine guest today who has dealt with some very patiently with some tech issues on my end. I was not meant to be the technological part of this wonderful podcast duo. So Miranda, we miss you, at least I do, we miss you so much right now. And I'm gonna introduce a wonderful, patient, and very, very kind guest today. So we have DC Gomez with us today, who is an award-winning and USA Today best-selling author. She's also a public speaker, mentor, and podcaster. She writes in multiple genres and has multiple books on the go. I couldn't list all the books she has, but some of them are Plague Unleashed, The Intern Diaries, and Forbidden War. So thank you, DC, for coming on our show. Thanks for all your patience with all our tech issues. And welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Jenna. By the way, this is normal. Trust me, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen live. I am officially the person I can tell you every single live. Something strange happens that didn't happen the week before. So I completely understand. Absolutely amazing. And thank you so much for having me.
It usually happens to me in a room full of students. And when I taught the older grades, they would help me successfully. Now that I teach the younger grades, they all help me, but it's unsuccessfully. They're like, plug it in, unplug it, tap it, tap it again, and then we just move on.
In case you're wondering, they're officially online to be IT specialists, because that's usually what I get when I call on the phone. It's like, have you unplugged it? Twice. Did it work? Obviously not. I'm calling you. Thank you for checking. Can we get to step three? So they should be fine. They can have a job troubleshooting. They're doing great.
Yeah, this is why we hire people. Well, thank you so much for coming. So I mentioned all the books you've written. Well, I didn't mention them all. I mentioned some of them, and there's eons more. And then mentioned that you do public speaking and you have a podcast yourself. And things. So I'm just wondering, where do you find time for all of these pursuits?
I live by my schedule and organized. I can just say that right now. Everything's very carefully planned. And I go through seasons. I have seasons where all I concentrate is writing. So I found out every year, I don't know why I'm surprised, that I'm not a writer that does really well in the summer. Like the summer, there's too much sunlight. There's too much stuff to do. I feel like I need to be outside. So I do a lot of conventions in the summer. I also try to do a lot of speaking. A lot of the engagements that have like the sun energy, like I need to be kind of like in a cave to write. So when it's pretty outside, I don't feel like writing. So it depends on the seasons. I do really well, but I do tend to have a very tight schedule in terms of what I'm going to do, what needs to happen and how it needs to happen. And it helps.
Do you have days that are blocked off for like outlining and days that are outlined for researching and things like that? Or is it more like I will work at this time on whatever there is?
A little bit of both. I'm very much a backwards planning. So whatever the deadline is going to be, I tend to work backwards. I know how much time I need for a specific project. Usually, unfortunately, when it comes to like podcasting, making sure the editing is done and working on that side of the production. So I'm very careful in making sure, okay, what is the deadline for this show to go out? Same thing for my speaking engagements. Is like, when do I need to be prepared? What do I need to do? So research comes throughout the day whenever an idea comes. For outlining, it literally, those are the things that you just kind of sit down and block like an entire weekend and just do it. Like I'm an outline. I would love to be a pantser. I have not been blessed with that. My muse leaves me about page 30 and doesn't come back to the end of the book. So I know, I don't know what happens. Like I would love to be a pantser. I would love to be that person that sits in front of the computer and just pours their soul and like a book comes out. That's not me. Like my soul comes in with a form of an outline. Like I got chapters layout. And then I can pants in between my chapters, but for the most part, I know exactly where this chapter needs to go and how we want to get it. There are very few books, some of them more than others, can deviate, but not enough for me to feel comfortable to say, yeah, I pants. No, I don't pants. I'm definitely structure-oriented.
I call myself a plancer. I'm not a full plotter, and I'm not a full pantser. I know where the novel begins, I know where it ends, and I know the major plot points. Sometimes as you're writing, even a little thread of dialogue will trigger something in your head and you're like, well, that's way better. Or a character, they don't always obey those little guys. And they'll do something and you're like, well, and then you got to wiggle it back. And so, but we're very opposite in our schedules though. To summer is when I find the time to write.
That is awesome.
Winter is that, you know, it's okay except around report card season. But I think a lot of new writers think that you have to be writing all the time. And that's not actually true. Or that people think that there's only one way to write, like sit down and write for 4 hours. And I know a lot of people do. They write for 4 or 5 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Miranda writes like that. I've never had 4 or 5 hours in a day. Even in the summer when I'm not teaching, I don't think I could sit still that long. But it's okay to have different styles. And it's okay for you to say, summer, I want to go out and meet people. I want to be with the flowers and the sky and the grass. And that's okay. And for me, report card season, nothing gets done except report cards.
I think you said it really well. Sometimes we have defined writing as a one way and only one way and tend to get writers very confused, especially aspiring writers. When I first wrote my first book, I followed that technique, like you needed to write every day. And what I ended up doing was writing a chapter a day, and my chapters were about 2,000 words. So I committed to like, and it sounds kind of strange because people are like, you wrote a book in a month and a half. I was like, give or take about 45 days, but I was writing every day. I was writing 2,000 words every day to get me to 80,000 words, but I already had the outline. I already had worked on this from the beginning to end. So there's something kind of a little deceiving. I have to kind of explain to people, yes, I wrote it physically, sat myself down in a chair and typed for 45 days, but there was a lot more at the beginning that took place that sometimes we don't count. But that doesn't mean that's the only way to do it. I am a believer that I'm a binge writer. Like, I'm going to commit to this and we're going to write till it's done. And then I might not write for 2 months. Does that make me less than a writer or not a writer? I think it just makes us unique. It gives us an ability to enjoy what we do and do it well without having to feel like I need to do it this way and this way only. I'm not that way. So I tend to have a lot of fun when I write. I do have to be in a really good space when I write and tell that to everybody. Like, I write on my couch and my furry assistant sits on top of the couch and he spies on me. We take plenty of breaks because God forbid he goes 2 hours without a snack because he will just die. So, I know, like, I would never get carpal tunnel with my cat around. He's just not going to let that happen. Like, we have to stop because he needs attention. So everybody has to find whatever that flow is, whatever makes you happy writing, because it should be a really fun process.
It definitely should. And, you know, some days I'll open my computer and I'll type a few words and I'll be like, I just don't have it today. You know, the students were driving me crazy. My kid wouldn't go to bed. Supper didn't sit right. I'm not going to sit and force myself to write for 3 hours because the next day I'm going to read back and it's not going to be so good. Right. And so it's good to have that understanding that we can all do it in our own ways. It's art. It's not data entry. There's many different ways. And I love what you said about the pre-work. Sometimes I'll be just sitting in a chair, staring into space. And my husband's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm writing. He's like, I don't see a computer. I don't see any pens or pencils. What's happening here? I'm like, well, I'm imagining, I'm creating, I'm daydreaming. This is part of the process. When writers say, I'm going to write today, but first I got to sit around and think for a bit. It is a joke, but it's also not. It's part of the process.
I call it going on a date with your characters. Honestly, that's usually what we do. It's going on a date. You're taking yourself and you're taking your time. And sometimes you just got to go somewhere, go to a coffee shop, go somewhere fun and go on this date and go on this journey and let yourself find that time to figure it out. What would these people do? You know, you're going to put them in these crazy situations. Sometimes you just have to let the situation sit with you and be like, if I was in that situation, what would I do? Like, yeah, I would not go there. Like, let's just not, you know, ourselves personally be like, ooh, that would be horrible. So much fun to write. And sometimes that's the part that we think we can skip. We think we can skip that journey within ourselves, that journey into this world that we're creating, because it is a creation process. And I love what you said. It's not data entry. You're not plugging in things into a computer and being like the little gerbil. You're literally enjoying this process of creating a universe. And the universe, you know, yes, it took God 7 days to create it. Might take us a little longer. It's okay to sit with it and just enjoy the process.
Sometimes I'm not even emotionally ready to write a scene. I'm like, I know it's coming. I know I have to do it. I know it's important. I know what it's going to be like, but I'm just not ready. And that's okay.
It is. It is so okay to feel yourself and be like, ooh, that one's going to hurt. Let me take some time. It will be okay. Mm-hmm. I have friends who actually don't write in order, which I think is amazing. I love it. I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I can skip to a chapter and then come back and fill in the blanks. I'm like, my mind needs to, I see a very visual. So it's almost like watching a movie. So this movie has to go forward in this order, not like shooting a film. Like I need to be able to see it from start to finish and write it that way. I would love to be able to write out of order and then just plug it in. I've not mastered that art. So I just tend to go with it.
I've tried to write chapters and scenes out of order. It doesn't work for me either because it just doesn't match. I write this and then I write this and then it just the pieces don't fit. So yes, admiration for anyone that can though, because then when you're ready, you don't have to wait till you get to a certain part. When you've got that scene in your mind, you can just write it. And I do write notes, but it's definitely an interesting discussion about different methods, different styles, different strategies, and it's all okay. It's really about just producing something at the end of the day, you know? I mean, you work backwards from your deadlines, but I remember Stuart McLean, who's a very famous Canadian author, he said, put yourself in a position where you have to write. Now, he had a weekly radio show, so he had to have it ready by a deadline. But a lot of new or indie authors, they don't have deadlines from a publisher or a publicist mm-hmm. or an editor. So we really have to set them for ourselves. And they're more than dreams, they're goals, because goals have a deadline, right? So my goal this summer is to write a children's book, get that first draft done, right? And I have to set it for myself.
I think we have to have realistic expectations of ourselves and then commit. Here's the hardest part, because we always say, oh, I'm going to write a book. And I hear it all the times. I have mentees who tell me all the time, and I'm asked them when. They're like, well, you know, I'm like, no, I don't. When is this book going to be written? And that commitment to yourself and achieving that is probably the biggest, most incredible feeling in the world, is to say, I did this. And it doesn't have to be by somebody. Somebody doesn't have to tell you need to write this book in September. It has to be whatever you decide. And then you commit to yourself and you say, okay, I'm going to do this. And this is when it's going to get done. And we're going to do it. And kind of stick with that. That will get you to the chair. That will get you to the page. That will get you to get past that point of fear, because then you have to do it. Sometimes the only way to get over fear is saying, okay, I don't have a choice. Like, this is going to get done one way or another, and we're going to do it. And I think that's the part that we tend to forget, is sometimes we let the fear hold us back because we are thinking of all the other reasons of all the things we can't do, instead of just saying, just get it done. Get the first draft done, and then you can work with whatever you have. But sometimes just getting to the page, sometimes you just have to say, this needs to get done on Sunday. Sit down and do it.
You have to eventually get up and do it, because writing is fun. It is beautiful. It is thrilling. But it's got some challenges. And I would definitely rather sit on the couch and watch reruns of Friends or Big Bang Theory and eat some mm-hmm. chips. But you have to. We're in that, what does Miranda always say? We're in the 10%, because there are, you know, half the people out there are like, oh, I have an idea for a book and I want to write a book and I'll do it someday. But we're the 10% that took some day and did it.
And sometimes you just have to go ahead and be like Nike, just do it. Stop thinking about it. Stop talking about it. Just sit down and do it. And the process becomes so much easier. My dad always says, the hardest thing for anything is start. Then start. I was like, oh, thanks, Dad. Let's go there.
My dad always says, be like Nike, just do it. I've never heard anyone else ever say that except him. I'm so happy right now.
Let him know that has been my phrase since I was in high school. Like, this is how long it goes. Like, he's like, just do it. I was like, I don't know what that means and how we're going to get it done, but just start. And then the rest will come to play.
Well, and I'm pretty sure, you might know this better than me, but I think Nike is the Greek goddess of victory.
Really? I think, yeah.
Well, we'll let someone.
We need to research that. Somebody type
we'll research
tell
that.
Us.
We'll let someone in the comments or when this gets posted, we'll let them either correct me or confirm that I am right. Maybe I am right.
That'd be awesome.
So this is a podcast where not only do we talk about writing, we definitely talk about books, and we are going to spend the next 15 minutes just talking about all your books and your latest release. But our viewers and our listeners are always curious, so to slide this in, what do you do outside of the writing? I know you talked about you have a cat, but do you have any hobbies or interests that aren't, you know, directly tied? I know as authors, we tend to, you know, we do drama and things, and they all kind of tie in. But what else do you have on your plate for when you're not creating, when you're not writing?
It's interesting because one of my biggest passion is dancing. I love to dance. I love music as a whole, which is something you see in a lot of my books. A lot of people, I've had positive and negatives commenting about how much pop culture references that have, especially to music, but I love it. It's part of my life. So I tend to do a lot of dancing when I'm not writing or when I get stuck creatively speaking. So dancing and cooking is things that everybody kind of goes like, really? That's what you enjoy to do? I love cooking. I usually do it on Sundays. And then I literally love dancing. Anytime I get stuck is usually where I would go to just to get away. So I'm that little kid that has all these little projects. I used to be a runner, have back issues, so I've stopped running. So now I just concentrate, like, what can I do inside that doesn't involve way too much exercise that I can have a blast? And I always go back to running, to dancing in my space and being able to get loose and creative. I'm also a meditation instructor, which, imagine that, like the person who likes really high music likes to be like zang out. So I start my day always meditating. So that's kind of the things that find my balance. I guess my flow is a little bit on the ups and downs. So I do it with meditation and then I kick it up with dancing. Fair enough.
Interesting. I for a moment I thought we were the same person, because as soon as you said dance, I was like, me too. And then you said cooking, I was like, no, I'm not allowed. Too many things are lit on fire. Too many, no.
Oh.
No. But that just proves that we're just not the exact same person. So it's good. I don't have a doppelganger out there somewhere.
We're close. We could be sisters. We could be sister.
There you go. So in the background behind you, I see a book cover. Yes. Can you tell me a little bit? I'm assuming that's your latest release.
It's actually part two. So book two, which is A Desperate Cat Lady, which in that series is the latest release. So I do a little bit of everything. Probably because I read a little bit of everything. So I do urban fantasy. I do contemporary lit. Everything comes very humor-based. I have children's books. I even have a devotional series. So I have a little bit of everything. Somebody asked me what ties them all together. I'm super quirky, in case nobody can tell. So my characters come with this amazing quirk, this amazing sensibility into their space and who they are. And a lot of them are always searching for family, or where they belong, or that village. So A Desperate Cat Lady is book two in the Cat Lady series. And is pretty much the premise is as outrageous as you can imagine, is a desperate woman, and I say desperate kind of loosely, you know. She was trying to find herself. Her husband left her after 20 years, and she's left with nothing. And you're finding herself going, what do I do with my life? What do you do when you have nothing to lose? And she became an arms dealer. And everybody was like, ooh, how are you going to pull it off? I was like, it's pretty funny once you realize is, you know, Breaking Bad means how Estella got her groove back. If you can put those two things together, this is a Cat Lady special, and this is what you have. So in Cat Lady, A Desperate Cat Lady, we're taking a little turn. So book one is all about finding herself. It's that second chance with herself. It's figuring out what is she going to do with her life, you know, because she's, and it, like the disclaimer is, it started with her considering suicide. Like, this is where she has in her life. And then finding herself and say, I have nothing to lose. Let's give this a chance and let's give a life a chance. Book two is a little different, you know, so we're about still within the whole, we're selling arms, definitely illegal. But in her mind, I'm like, Walmart sells guns. How bad can this be? Yeah, this is how she defines her life. I didn't say it was a great master plan. But now we start this book at a murder. And it just happens to be Angela happens to be the person finding this. And Angela wants to have a semi-normal life for an arms dealer. That's really all she wants to do. She wants to be left alone, minding her own business, and just life doesn't get her way. So it's a fun little adventure of a very almost, I wouldn't call it a cozy mystery, but it's much more of radical mystery in small towns with an arms dealer. All you can imagine.
Well, I was going to ask. I'm like, I don't even know what genre this is, but I want to read it. And the first book, it sounds like a love story with yourself, trying to, you know, discover the things that you love about yourself. And that, I mean, we do define ourselves by other people, but they don't have to define us.
With Angela, the fun part about it is she figures it out. There's a lot of times she's not willing to save herself. You know, she doesn't know what to do for herself, but she's willing to fight for her family, for the loved ones. One of the things that came about is I have what I call the silver hair gang. So there's a group of older ladies, obviously silver hair, who are like, just happened to join her gang and start selling guns. And I'm like, why a 70-year-old woman selling guns? It's like, why not? You know, what are you willing to do when life throws you a curveball? So it is that family. A lot of people ask me if it's very woman-led. It is a main character is a bunch of women. But so yes, I have gentlemen who have read it and loved it as well, just because they're so outrageous in their madness and they're so unapologetically human. We all have had people in our lives who say the strangest things and you're going, did you say that out loud? You did. Okay, this is where we're going with this. So A Desperate Cat Lady is probably, when it comes to writing, I love urban fantasy, anything with magic's amazing. So when it comes to writing, Angela's a little different because there's not a talking cat that's there to save me like my other series. There's nothing magical to support this universe. It's very real. A lot of the things that happen to her are very raw when it comes to the emotions and her journey. And yet she takes it with this light disposition of like, I'm going to make the best of this because why is this happening to me? So she goes ahead and has these incredible adventures. Genre's a little bit woman-led, very, very humor. Anytime somebody asks me what category, I put it as, you know, fictional humor because you're going to laugh. You're supposed to laugh. Like the stuff that happens to them is like, what? Why? It's like, why not? Well, why not? Let's just have this much fun. We can.
I support, you know, classifying literature in their genres, but I also don't, because there's so much good literature that doesn't completely fit, or it's like, it's urban fantasy, romance, mystery, contemporary humor, you know, what it is, what it is, right? They said the Outlander books would never sell because it was like historical time travel romance. And those things are famous. So, and if you don't do something new, then you're not a trendsetter, but you're also not being true to your story. So, you know, I kind of like that it's classified one way, but it can also be.
Oh my God. I usually tell everybody, be authentic to your story and your characters. Be authentic to what that story is going to be. When I started writing A Desperate Cat Lady, I had this idea it was going to be all expose, scandalous. It was going to have a little touches of, you know, 50 Shades of Grey, all sorts of things that I don't write. Like, I don't write any form of erotica or anything truly spicy and steamy. I'm very, to some extent, PG with my writing. I'll give you some hints and it'll be kind of sexy. And then my face. Yeah, it might fade to black. You fill in your own blanks. I'll let you at that. So even with my urban fantasy, I think I have one scene that is actually fairly steamy. That was like, ooh, is this the beginning? It's like, no, this might be the end. Like, it's just, that's who that character is. There's nothing much about it. So being authentic to Angela made it a very cozy mystery. You know, she had to figure out who did it. And she had to figure out who did it because it was affecting her business. It wasn't because she wanted it. Like, this is in my way. Like, this thing is affecting my life. There's too many cups around here. We got to do something. So it became much more of a, like, necessity than like, oh, yes, let's go sell. It's like, no, she wanted nothing to do with that. She was not interested in selling nothing and to impact her life, which I think would be much more of a human reaction. Many of us are not going to. Yeah, think about it. Many of us are not going to be like, ooh, somebody got murdered across the street. We need to go figure it out. I'm like, no, we're not. We're going to be like, well, that was exciting. Close the door. Like, I don't know what's going on. Let's make sure nobody comes into our house. So Angela has much more rational reactions to things like, no, that's not a good idea. Don't do that. And yes, she's still in there. Yeah, still she has to do it because she's like, oh God, it's affecting my life. Now we got to fix this. We got to fix this quickly because we got things to do and this is not going to work.
I like it. You can learn so much more about characters by what they're more thrust into than what they choose. I mean, what they choose does reveal a lot of things about them, but it's putting them in that fish out of water situation where you're like, I am not equipped to handle this, or I don't want to. I don't want to, but I have to. And that's when you really find out what your metal is. And it's a great way to expose character in a totally different way. So I quite like it. Is there going to be a third book in the series? Is it going to keep going?
I don't know. I can honestly tell you, this one is one of those things that I'm like, normally with my series, I know how many books I'm going to have. I know exactly where they're going to go. I know that arc process. With Angela and this gang of craziness, we have no idea. We're just winging it. So if there is, you're going to find it soon. I wasn't sure there was going to be a book two. I knew I wanted one. And every single person like, when is the next one coming? I'm like, oh God. And the only reason was like, I should not have called this a series. I should have just let it be and have this baby wrapped in itself and be perfectly okay. So I don't know. I want to say yes. I definitely think I want to do a book three just because I went, I have a lot of friends that are going on cruises. So I'm like, oh, how amazing to take them on a cruise and then have a murder.
It's self-contained. You got to figure it out. There's a deadline.
What do we do? Oh, you can't get off the cruise. So I'm like, oh my God. It's like, and how do I add her arms business into this? Maybe they're meeting somebody on the cruise and they have all this undercover stuff. So yeah, so the whole cruise idea keeps popping into my head. I was like, Angela and the ladies are going on a cruise. This is about to go down. So
have you ever been on a cruise?
I have.
Because I went once and it was a totally different world. Like, I can imagine the world building that you could do just within the cruise and what a weird, quirky world it is on a cruise. I can definitely see a lot of potential.
Just imagine cruises, everything's a lot more intense. I don't know what it is. Like, people are like on a schedule. We got to get to that bar. We got to get to the food line. And you're not going anywhere. Like, you can eat anytime. Why do we have to be this strict about this? So I think it would be hysterical to put Angela and the Silver Hair Gang in a cruise situation where they have things that they're supposed to get done and figuring it out and have just a random murder happening. Like, what do you do? So here's the reason why book three is probably coming, just because I'm like, oh my God, how much more fun would that be just to explore this massive mayhem on a cruise and then they can't get back. That's kind of the catch. Like, not like somewhere in the middle, they're like, you know, Caribbean. So you have to be stuck. I'm like, oh God, what do we do?
So yes. I just see a lot of scenes happen around the supper time. I don't know what it was like on your cruise, but when I went, you know, you just got assigned tables with random people. You know, they just put you where, and it's like, nice to meet you. I'll be dining with you tonight. Strange couple from Arkansas so I can see a lot of things opening up. And you know what I love to see is you getting a little giddy, like a little giggly.
Oh my God.
Being like, ooh, this could happen. And that's the magic. That's what drives authors. We whether the idea comes from a picture, a postcard, a dream, a meme, whatever, we get that giggle of, ooh, this could happen, or what could happen, or, you know, in my case, what could I do to torture my characters more?
Just think about it this way. We get this way talking about it to anyone, like anyone who is a reader or a writer. We have this connection and we're like, oh my God, listen what I want to do. And they're like, how does your mind work that way? It's like, I don't know. Like, before I used to be offended. Like, I wanted to defend the way my mind functioned. Now I'm just like, it happens, but it's going to be amazing. Let me explain this. You're going to have like hands rubbing the whole nine yards. I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be so much fun. But it is getting to that point. It's just, this is probably the most fun part of the process is the creation. It is letting these ideas come together and be like, that will be funny. Once my editor comes back, she's like, I don't know what that meant. It was like, it was really funny in my head, I swear. Like, but yeah, you okay, promise. Maybe not. It was hysterical. Now it's like, maybe not so much, but okay. We'll make it happen.
When you can giggle while you're typing and you're like, well, no one else might find it funny. It might get cut later, but this is hilarious to me.
I think one of my favorite scenes in Cat Lady, at least the Cat Lady special, and I honestly thought it was just hysterical, and I have been commentating this forever, is Angela, I think chapter two or three is way at the beginning. She walks in, you know, right after she's thinking about killing herself. She walks to the, you know, the senior citizen to have lunch with her mom and her ladies. And she's like, so she walks in and she's trying to put her life together. By the way, she's a hot mess. And if you ever lived in the South, there's a certain way ladies need to look. Angela does not look proper at all. She's a hot mess in the making. And they're like, ooh, honey, girl, you don't look cute, by the way. Yeah. So you have older ladies who tend to tell you how it is, and they're brutal about it. So one of the comments that they have, like, you know, 70-year-old, 80-year-old, is like, sweetie, you need to eat. She's like, what? I'm fine. She's like, yeah, ribs are not sexy. Like, nobody's sending money to little kids overseas saying, look at the sexy ribs. And one of the readers, I had probably the best review ever. She was like, such a great body comment. And I was like, I wasn't aiming to make a commentary on body image, but it is a commentary. It is that idea that we have this perception of what beauty is, you know, and back in the day, beauty was not about being skin and bones or just being unhealthy. It was about having that glow, and Angela officially looked like a hot mess. And then she sounds like, you need to eat, girl. This is not cute. This is not sexy. And in her head, she's like, what am I supposed to do? Like, I'm getting advice from 70-year-olds on what's sexy. Really? But yeah, she was a hot mess. So those are the things that I was extremely pleased when that translated really well. And it wasn't just funny in my head. I was like, I think that's really funny. So when other people's like, okay, that was really funny, I'm like, yes, I nailed that one.
That's the victory. That's the author victory. That's yes. That's the moment when whatever emotion you're trying to get, maybe it's a laugh, maybe it's a tear. Every time my aunt phones me and is like, why would you do that to that poor girl? I'm like, yes. That's all we
victory.
Want. Some sort of emotion, a gasp, a cry, mm-hmm. a what, you know, going back and rereading and be like, did that,
mm-hmm. And usually think about it this way. Whenever our emotions are connected, it tends to translate to the page. I don't care what anybody says. I've written some stuff that I'm crying while I'm typing it. And people's like, oh my God, I was crying. I was like, oh, thank you. Cause I thought I was the only one. I'm glad you felt it too. So those are those connections, I think, that comes with being a writer. At the end of the day, we all are storytellers, and we're trying to tell you this amazing adventure in as many words as we can and as beautiful as possible. And sometimes every book's not for everybody. I have that comment for everybody. My books might not be for everybody, but the tribe that finds them, they love it and they have a blast. So it is about finding a tribe. It is about finding those people that will connect to what we write, that resonates, that actually makes them feel excited about it. And they're looking forward to these crazy journeys. So as a writer, it's finding your tribe. And if you're an aspiring author who's looking to figure it out, like, what do I do? It's like, find your tribe. You know, everything you write is not going to fit everybody. It's just, if you question it, remember, you don't like everything you read. So if that's the case, then it's okay that your books are not for everybody. One of my dear friends told me once, like, you're not ice cream. Everybody's not supposed to like you. I was like, oh, I like that. I know. I was like, that's a really valid point. I am okay with that.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I write YA. My husband's never really showed an interest in what I write. I write YA where all my main characters are female protagonists. You know, like, that's just, I don't like Stephen King. It's too scary. So that's a perfect note to end on, is that we're not everyone's cup of tea, but as long as you stay true to yourself, to your story, to your characters, it's all going to work out. You'll find your tribe. So it's a perfect ending. Before we say goodbye, and I do have to say thank you, thank you, thank you for putting up with the fact Miranda's not here. We had a little tech issue. Thank you for coming. But before we head off, let's say everyone that's watched this and everyone that's listened to this now wants to buy not only the books that you've been talking about right now, but all your other books. Where can they go out and find those books, and where can they find you?
The easiest way to look at it, I usually tell everybody, find me on my website, because it'll give you one place to click and go everywhere else. So it's dcgomez-author.com. So dcgomez-author.com. My website's pretty simple. If you are on Amazon, I'm getting ready to kind of put a lot of my stuff on Kindle Unlimited, so you can find The Intern Diaries if you like fantasy in there. So I'm trying to keep all my fantasy as much as possible on KU. What I'm trying to do with all my other releases is give them a starting point on KU before I go wide with them, so everybody can have an opportunity. So if you're a Kindle Unlimited reader, take full advantage of them. Come on, you're paying for the subscription. You might as well enjoy it. I'm going to try to help you out. And that you can find everything on my website and definitely on Amazon.
Awesome. And we'll make sure when this podcast goes out to all our channels that all those links are added in. Thank you so much for being here. We need to say a big shout out to our sponsors, the Writers Corner Network and Creative Edge Publicity, and of course, the most important people, all our listeners and all our viewers. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.